Engaging the Local Church in Mission. It's the Pastor's Heart and Dominic Steele. Thanks for joining us today. Tim Silberman is my guest. He's a lecturer at Sydney Missionary and Bible College. And look, before we come to him, if you could help us out with the Pastor's Heart, that'd be great. You could let a peer in ministry know about this program. That'd be terrific. Or you could financially support us if you went to patreon.com/thepastor'sheart. We would really appreciate that. Now, Tim was speaking at a conference last week, a Peak Mission Leaders Conference, and he gave a fascinating presentation on what's going on with the local churches in engagement in mission, and I thought that was very interesting. Then I discovered it was his PhD topic, and I said, could you come in and give us a half-time report on your PhD? And he's kindly agreed to do so. And so, Tim Silberman, tell us, you've been researching the Australian Evangelical Church and our engagement in mission, and what's it all done to your heart?
Yeah, well, I think in many ways it's been an encouragement. I think God is doing great things through evangelicals in Australia. And so, it has been an encouragement to hear stories of churches engaging, sending people out. But at the same time, I guess, God has given me a great hunger to see the church fully engaged in God's mission in their local context, but also in sending people to the ends of the earth. And I've also, I guess, just become increasingly aware of untapped opportunities, I suppose, opportunities that churches may have to get more fully engaged, and sometimes they're not taking that. So it's an encouragement, but also spurred me on to keep going.
So tell us about, what was it about your heart that got you into this topic, researching this area?
Yeah, it's a bit of a long journey, I suppose. I grew up in a Christian family. I had, you know, contact with missionaries on the fridge, all that sort of thing. But when I was at university, I met a lovely young lady who's now my wife, who was involved in a youth ministry that WEC, the mission organization WEC, ran. And that really helped me understand more about how mission was happening around the world, and put me in touch with lots of missionaries who became friends, and I understood their stories. And I think that was really the beginning of a long journey that God took me on. I was a physiotherapist in a previous life, thought about serving overseas. That took me to SMBC. That got me engaged in global mission. And I guess I've, particularly during my studies at SMBC, that growing conviction that God's mission is the responsibility of the local church. Mm-hmm. That mission agencies have an important role to play, but it's the church who needs to be raising up and sending out cross-cultural workers.
So in your research, what have you discovered about church culture today that impacts on mobilisation for mission?
There's so many things, I suppose. Hard to summarise it. I think churches are growing in their enthusiasm for participation in God's mission, both locally and overseas. So there's been a huge change in the way our language around mission is used over the last few decades. And so increasingly when we're talking about mission, there are many churches that really just think about their own community and don't give a lot of thought to what's happened beyond there. And so in those churches, I think sometimes the culture of mission can be, we're surrounded by lots of unsaved people, our mission is to our local community, there's so much to do, and there's not a lot of thought beyond there. But there's also a good number of churches that do have, I guess we'd say, a global vision, a global, including the local, not as an alternative to. And those churches that have a truly global vision are engaging what's happening around the world. And that's also, I think, stimulating a lot of their engagement in their local community.
So if you like, the correlation between local evangelistic activity and then concern for global mission, the E and the M, if you like.
Yeah, to use the old language, we used to talk about sort of evangelism locally and mission happening around the world. But there's an interesting correlation there that I've found, which is that there are churches that are very engaged locally, but show minimal engagement beyond their local community. And there's a number of those, but it's There are a number of churches that are really engaged overseas, and that seems to stimulate a local involvement. So if you like, the highly e-churches can be that without being engaged with distant mission, but the churches that are really engaged with distant mission are much more likely to be engaged locally. So so there seems to be a stimulus that works that direction.
And so that the overseas missionary might encourage local evangelism and hence local church growth.
Right, yes, yes. I think it becomes a mutual relationship there, so where the church's engagement with distant missionaries does actually drive their heart for their local community as well as what's happening around the world.
Okay, we'll come back to that point in a moment, but perhaps first we could dive in, and there's a slide that you produced showing what's going on, particularly with different sizes of churches and engagement in mission. We'll put that up on the screen. Do you just want, if you're listening to us on the podcast, it won't, the audio podcast, this won't help you. So we're going to get you, Tim, to talk us through what's going on this slide.
Yes, okay. So as part of a survey that I did, I basically looked at churches, evangelical churches of varying sizes, less than 50 and right up to more than 500, and looked at them in different size groups to kind of compare like with like. I think essentially what this slide shows is that the larger the church is, the more likely you are to be supporting more people doing mission in Australia and more people doing mission overseas. In some ways, that's obvious. But it's interesting to see the relationship between engaging locally and engaging overseas, in that it seems like churches that are sort of 250 to 500, they tend to perhaps there's a trend in my research to support more people locally than they do overseas. Whereas when you get to the more than 500, it seems the relationship swaps it back a little bit the other way. So that's an interesting finding. I don't know that I put a huge amount of weight of it, but that does seem a trend.
Are you saying the larger churches are not pulling their weight in terms of overseas mission?
I actually think that it's medium-sized churches that proportionally do the greatest work. Yeah. So churches that are sort of around 200, 250, I think, are punching above their weight compared to the churches that are above 500, say, the really large churches on an Australian measure, they perhaps proportionally aren't doing as much.
Why do you think that is?
Well, we all have
theories. You're doing the PhD, we should listen to you.
I think my suspicion is, essentially, it's one of kind of, you have a bias depending on what's in front of mind, what's right in front of you. And when you get large, there's just so much happening within your immediate sphere of concern. There are so many opportunities in your local community, so many people to mobilise for that can somehow grow and perhaps obscure your vision a little bit for what's happening beyond your local community. So that's not universally true, obviously, but I think there's a danger that we can be swamped by what's right in front of us and not have our eyes lifted to that beyond.
As you've thought about different ages and mission, what are some of your observations about engaging different age groups? Particularly, you used a term last week at this seminar, the COVID generation. What's the COVID generation?
Yeah, I just made that up, but I think we're going to...
It sounds like it is going to be a generation-defining term. Why do you think so, as a missiologist?
Well, I think we've been talking a lot about Gen X and Gen Y and Gen Z and Gen Alpha, and how those cohorts differ. But this global pandemic is going to have a profound sociological effect. And in the same way that we think about the impact of the Depression on the generations that came after, the impact of the world wars on the generations that came after, I don't think there's any doubt that what we're experiencing now is going to have impact, particularly on those younger people, those people who are, you know, graduating high school at the moment, about to face university, entering into the workplace. I think we're going to see some... just in terms of the way they view the world, I think there's greater uncertainty around careers and things like that. There's going to be That may well
am I going to get a job? Just seemed like a foregone conclusion 4 years ago.
Exactly.
And it was whatever job I wanted, it was all open to me.
That's right, yes. And I think especially some of those assumptions that have come to drive the Gen Y cohort that, you know, you can just be true to yourself and be whatever you want and live your dreams and, you know, you can see it all come true. We see that on reality TV all the time. I think our experience of COVID is going to undermine that assumption a little bit, mm-hmm. which is probably not such a bad thing. No. But it's also going to... I don't know exactly what the impact's going to be, but I think there's going to be some interesting impacts on the way some of our young adults at the moment are going to enter into the world.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that will lead more of them to think, well, I'm never going to be a millionaire. The gospel's wonderful. Let me throw my life into that and get fully absorbed in God's work. You know, we often see that people reevaluate in times of stress, so we can pray that that happens. But at the same time, it might make people more risk-averse. They might be less willing to engage in God's work here and to the ends of the earth. So who knows?
Whether you call them the COVID generation or you call them young adults, how do we engage them in mission?
Look, I think in some ways it probably hasn't changed. So what we've been thinking about, how do we engage millennials? And that is relationship. That's the short answer. This generation is... longing for relationship in a way that I think previous generations haven't longed for. And I think the reason is because our individualistic society is kind of undermining community a little bit. And so where that relationship is offered, where that opportunity exists, then I think they latch onto it with both hands. And so those real relational connections with mission workers, I suppose, if we use a broad term to include people in our local community as much as working to the ends of the earth, I think that relational engagement is what will really motivate and engage this younger generation to take the next step and to have people who are willing to, I guess, journey with them, if I can use a bit of a cliche, but to just walk that step with them. You're not going to get a 20-year-old today. Well, that's not true. You very rarely get a 20-year-old today saying, I want to go and do whatever I can for the next 30 years. You know, I'm going to pack stuff in my casket and go to the mission field. But you'll see them say, I'm going to commit to this for 2 years. And so you walk with them through that 2 years and you see God work in them and move them forward. And often that'll grow in them a deeper commitment that will then lead them to take the next step, the next step, the next step. So I think that relational engagement, obviously paired with a deep understanding of the gospel. That's ultimately our foundation and motivation for mission. But in that relational context, I think that's where we'll see the strength come.
And I heard you use the term not mobiliser, but influencer. Mm. What did you mean by that?
I think our younger generation they can sniff advertising and marketing a mile off. And they're a little bit offended by it. And I think some of our missions mobilisation strategies in the past have looked a little bit too much like marketing. And I just don't think that's going to wash. I think we need to rather take the mindset, I guess, a little bit of, and this can be a little bit crass, but when you see our sort of Instagram influencers, the way that they engage the younger generation is they share their lives, you know, which is a pretty biblical concept, I think, when we see the way that Paul related to the Thessalonians. But it's, you know, here I am going to the shops, here I am cooking an egg, here I am, you know, buying a new shirt, whatever it is.
On my way to the Reach Out conference.
For example, that's right. And so I think we need to just invite people into that relationship, invite people into what does it look like to live a gospel-shaped, mission-driven life. Come with me on that journey. See what it looks like. The power of modelling.
Especially the Apostle Paul saying, follow my example as I follow the example of Christ.
Right, yeah. Exactly. It's not that innovative. I think imitation is, that's actually what I did my master's research on, the power of imitation in Christian discipleship. And I think we see that particularly in the field of cross-cultural mobilising people for mission engagement. It's come with me. Do it with me. Watch how I go. Yeah.
Now, I heard you also use a term slobalisation. What did you mean by that?
Yes. This is an idea that I've actually stolen from The Economist. Mm-hmm. So this was the first reference I can find to it was in the journal The Economist, mm-hmm. The magazine at the beginning of last year. And it's really just an observation that globalization is being undone. Mm-hmm. To a certain extent, we're seeing those interconnections around the world dissolving. So Brexit, Trump, Bolsonaro, what's happening between China and Australia at the moment. We're seeing those connections dissolve. And now the economists are very concerned because they think that's going to slow global economy, and that may well be the case. But that's going to have an impact on our global interconnections. It's going to have an impact, I think, on our freedom to do short-term mission. Mm-hmm. It's going to have an impact on the sort of... Yeah, just opportunities, I guess, to really engage across cultures and the need, I think, which is probably a good one, to have really meaningful mutual partnerships with nationals, mm-hmm. wherever that might be, to get alongside the local church, no matter how small and struggling it might be, and work with them, to be invited by them and to work alongside them in different places.
So it's not really a COVID-inspired term. It's something broader than that.
No, it was happening before COVID, yeah. But I think there are a few people who are saying COVID's going to accelerate it. In fact, we're already seeing it accelerate it in terms of the disconnection between nations. And so that may well be another...
It feels like a long time before the nations are going to be connected like they were before.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. And I think we're going to... it'll take time to see what that looks like. But, you know, there's lots of streams flowing together here. I think the nationalistic zeal that we're seeing around the world, but that is leading to this disconnection. That will also, I think, be a feature of the COVID generation.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Now, let's come back to that point you were making earlier about the highly engaged in evangelism at home and the link between concern for either overseas mission or local mission. And Tim's got another slide that we'll put up now. Mm-hmm. Now, these people on the left column, the high E, mid E and low E, mm-hmm. what mm-hmm. does that mean? And again, if you're listening to us on the audio podcast... Go and watch us at pastorsart.net.
Yep. So essentially, this survey was 200 evangelical churches.
Yep.
And I asked them about their evangelistic activities. Mm-hmm. You know, there are evangelistic events, there are evangelistic courses, there...
And some were going to be busy and some were going to be quiet.
Right, exactly. And then I basically just sort of stratified the group and mm-hmm. went, okay, let's... accounting for size, because obviously you get size variation, let's look at what are the features of the most evangelistic 25%, mm-hmm. compare that to the least evangelistic 25%, and all those in the middle. And what I saw across those, I guess, is that in some ways there's not a huge amount of difference in terms of their engagement with mission overseas.
Mm-hmm.
The churches that aren't very engaged...
Yes, it's really 7% versus 6%,
right,
isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very small difference. The really low evangelistic churches, I think, the churches that have low levels of evangelism, they too do tend to be less engaged. I've also looked at some data from the National Church Life Survey that sort of shows that I guess there are churches that are just, well, it's health. It's a measure mm-hmm. of health to a certain extent. And churches that aren't healthy are kind of doing neither. But having that high level of engagement in local mission or evangelism, as mm-hmm. I'm calling it here, doesn't necessarily translate to a high level of engagement in supporting mission beyond your local community.
Okay. Why do you think that's the case?
I guess it's a little bit like I said before. It's a little bit of the bias of what you see. So it's easy to be aware of the needs in front of you. You know, you walk down the street and you see the lost. Mm-hmm. You see the people. You have your next door neighbours who don't know the gospel, and your heart goes out to mm-hmm. them. You long for them to have that joy of knowing Christ that you have. And if you're not having people help you lift your eyes beyond that local community, it's easy to just forget, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the having connections beyond your local community, having connections to people overseas, to give you that global awareness, just helps to inspire you to engage beyond. So it's kind of just a consequence of where you're looking and what you're seeing.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Right. And yet, I think you're saying, I think you were saying a few minutes ago, if you look at the churches that are highly engaged overseas,
right.
it will have an impact back back home locally.
Yes.
And we've got that as a table, which we'll put up. We'll put up now. So these churches, you've got some who are highly engaged. What does a highly engaged in mission church look like?
Right.
As opposed
sure.
to a not so engaged church.
So I asked lots of questions in the survey, and I then tried to amalgamate them. Mm-hmm. So I asked about, you know, how often are you praying for your missionaries? How often are you having regular communication with mm-hmm. them? Are you visiting them? How many missionaries do you support? How many have you sent out in the last 5 years? Are you having short-term mission trips?
And some were doing all of those and some weren't.
Right.
What's the impact of the, our church is really highly engaged in mission mm-hmm. on local evangelism and things?
Yes, yes. So what I think we see there is that they're more supportive of mission beyond their local community mm-hmm. elsewhere in Australia mm-hmm. as well as overseas. They tend to be more engaged in just sharing the gospel with mm-hmm. their neighbours, having evangelistic activities locally. And they are giving a higher proportion of their funds, not only to distant mission, but also to mission mm-hmm. within Australia. So mm-hmm. that might be student ministry, that might be, supporting, I guess, other evangelistic prison ministries, things mm-hmm. like that within Australia.
Yeah.
And this is the focus of my session on Thursday, they're also raising up the missionaries. So if we want to know where the missionaries are coming from, they're coming from these churches that are just generally engaged. They're praying, they're in regular contact with them, they're supporting them financially, and all of those things together provide a context, a soil, if you like, that the seeds of our future missionary generation kind of sprouts from.
So if I was just to reflective listen, what I think you're saying to me, if I'm a local church minister, which mm-hmm. I am, and actually, I mean, I want to bring glory to Christ and all that, but I actually just want my place to be self-sustainable. Do you know?
Right,
and,
yes, sure.
And I want my place to grow.
Yep, you know? Yep, yep.
And I think I'm hearing you say, if I want our church to be self-sustaining and growing, mm-hmm. then actually one of the ways to bring that about is to lift my eyes beyond our patch to global mission. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly right. Yes, that's what I'm seeing from my survey, from my interviews with people, that when we have that engagement with what's happening beyond our local community, and not just us as church leaders, I think this is important, but where the congregation is having their eyes lifted, that you know, regular person sitting in the pew is having their eyes lifted beyond their local community, that engages them for God's mission right where they are mm-hmm. as much as over there. And something that I think is really important is, as I've talked to people, the idea of capacity often comes up. You know, mm-hmm. do we have the capacity to support missions overseas? You know, and I think often people equate capacity with finances.
Mm-hmm.
And increasingly, I want to be saying to people, think of all the ways that you can support and engage with missionaries that aren't necessarily financial, mm-hmm. I suppose. Think about how you can be praying, how you can be talking to them regularly, how you can be Skyping them, you know, mm-hmm. once a term. How can you be supporting them practically? Mm-hmm. So trying to have a full-orbed picture of just that relational connection with mission workers mm-hmm. beyond our local community, because it's actually that relational connection that will drive the engagement. Now, that being said, I think finance is also an important part of partnering with people, but let's not reduce it to finance, and because that can tend to make some people nervous, mm-hmm. I guess, about do we really have the capacity to do this?
Yeah, we were talking to Tim Clements a few weeks ago, and he made the observation that it had far less to do with what was going on in our wallet and far more to do with our vision, do you know, and whether our eyes were on the gospel, our eyes were on the harvest fields,
yes,
and whether or not the senior pastor was pointing people's eyes in those directions.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think if we point people's heart there, and I think your heart should manifest in behaviour, mm-hmm. like it should demonstrate in your prayers, in your willingness to engage, in your willingness to write a letter, mm-hmm. you know, like missionaries, mission workers wherever love to hear how things are going in your church. How can it be a truly mutual partnership? Explore those opportunities. And often finances will flow. Mm. You know, that as your heart's engaged, that will become part of the picture. But don't focus on that.
Mm.
That I think can distract people from what's most important.
Mm. Mm. Now, on this next graph, there was one you did a comparison of different denominations.
Yes.
And so you've got the Anglicans, the Baptists, the Presbyterians, the Independents, and the others.
Yes.
What's the difference between an Independent and another?
Yes.
I suppose it's another denomination.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It was other denominations. It was very small numbers, a couple of uniting and reformed and things like that. Let me preface this by saying my sample was not a representative sample. Mm-hmm. So while there were 200
but you were
churches.
Evangelical, reformed,
right.
Missional.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Lots of, but I guess it was a bit of a selective sample. So so these numbers might not represent.
But 200's not nothing.
No, that's right. That's right. I think this was just a slight trend, I suppose, from what I could see, that some denominations were perhaps more likely to be highly engaged in evangelism without being highly engaged in mission beyond than other denominations.
Some, i.e. Anglican?
I.e. Anglican, yes, in my sample. Yeah.
Highly engaged in local evangelism.
Right.
And less engaged in global mission.
That's right, yes. So that was a trend, yeah. Whereas Baptists seem to be the other way around.
And yet if you're focused on global mission, that will lead to growth locally.
Right, yes. So having that global vision does drive that local evangelism, but having that local vision doesn't necessarily drive your global engagement.
Right. And the Baptists were the other way around.
There was a trend for the other way around. There was a greater likelihood, I guess, that they did have that. Well, there were fewer
actually,
churches.
They were focused on global and not as focused on local. Was that what you're saying?
No, not necessarily. Right, there were a few that, but they were just more likely to have that global and local.
Mm-hmm.
And less likely to have that. We're really focused on our local neighbourhood and we're not thinking much about what's happening mm-hmm. beyond. So, yeah.
Right. Okay. Now, local members of churches and missionaries, how do you best facilitate relationships there?
Mm. Time, I think, is probably the short answer. It's been interesting as I've talked to different church leaders and church members that by far the most engaged churches in supporting and relating to missionaries are churches that have sent their own.
Mm-hmm.
So the best thing you can do if you want to see your church engaged in God's mission around the world is send someone from your congregation. Mm. Now, that might not be something you can do tomorrow, but that is a very powerful driver of engagement mm-hmm. because you know this person, you love them, you want to hear their stories and pray for them and support them in whatever way you can. Where that's not possible, I would say we need to take every opportunity to invest deeply in relationships. So if you can, before they go, invite them to spend a significant amount of time in your church, not just one Sunday and attend a small group, but ask if they can spend quite a few weeks there. I spoke recently to someone who had served overseas for many, many years and has now served as a pastor. And he said when he was a missionary, one of the greatest blessings was when he came back on home assignment. One of his supporting churches said, "We want you to come and work for us for a month. Just come and be a part of the church for a month. Get involved in the services. Mm-hmm. Get involved, you know, preach for us. Get involved in our small groups." Now, not all mission workers are going to be able to do that or suitable, but I think the more time you can spend just investing in those relationships and maintaining them while they're away through Zoom and, you know, we've realized how easy it is to engage globally now, you're going to see huge dividends from that relational engagement.
Mm.
So that, I think, is probably the most important thing. The second thing I would say is go for depth before breadth. So it's better to have fewer missionaries and have really meaningful engagement, meaningful mutual partnerships with them than it is to sort of have a scattergun approach.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some churches, I think, especially older churches, sometimes you kind of accumulate these missionaries over years and, you know, this was, you know, Mary's son and so we're supporting him, but we really don't know him very well.
Mm-hmm.
I think try to avoid those kind of minimalistic relationships. Think about how you can have those meaningful connections. If that means you only have two mission partners, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Do it well. Yes, and particularly for church plants. I've seen too many church plants that kind of say, well, when we're big enough, then we'll do it. Get it in the DNA of your church. Yeah, yeah, it's got to be right there at the beginning. And even if it's one person and it's primarily a relational commitment, you know, you're not giving a lot of financial support, get that into the DNA of your church and then let it grow as the church grows.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Now, you did some analysis on churches and their support for local mission work within Australia,
mm-hmm.
mission work versus overseas mission work. Mm. What did you work out there in terms of sizes of churches, which ones they were backing,
yes.
what kinds of churches backed what kind of things?
Yes, yes. I haven't got all the nuts and bolts because it was fairly
broad
high
trends?
Level.
Yeah.
I think broad trends is there are lots of people. I think we're seeing increasingly people recognising that mission partners may well work within Australia. And, mm-hmm. and that's a worthwhile investment,
yeah.
whether that be in Indigenous ministry or whether that be in student mm-hmm. ministry in, you know, Melbourne or whatever mm-hmm. it is. That can still be really valuable, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Just the modelling power of someone who's given their life to the gospel and also who are there often front line, so mm-hmm. to speak. Student ministers are great for if you can tap into their stories, their experiences of discipleship and evangelism,
mm-hmm.
let them drive especially your young people's engagement, you
mm-hmm.
know. So I think we're seeing lots of churches that are supporting mission workers, is what I call them, in other parts of Australia, as well as those beyond overseas. There was one trend that I guess it did seem that those kind of 250 to 500 attendee churches tended to actually support quite a lot of those
mm-hmm.
and fewer overseas missionaries, whereas once you got over 500, the relationship switched the other way, as I mentioned earlier.
Right.
Fascinating.
Tim, thanks so much for coming in.
It's my pleasure.
My guest on The Pastor's Heart, Tim Silberman. He's a lecturer at Sydney Missionary and Bible College and talking to us today about engaging the local church in mission. You've been with us on The Pastor's Heart, and we'll look forward to your company next time. Hey, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, we would love it if you could hop over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating and review. That helps us in the rankings and lets other people discover The Pastor's Heart. And again, if you are able to help us out by being a financial partner, go to our Patreon link, patreon.com/thepastorsheart.